Hi, I'm Donna. And I get the pleasure, introducing Maggie. One of the really cool things about being around this program for long enough is you get to see the miracle of what happens with people. You know, I watched this woman come in, and she was just so sad. I don't think I saw her smile for like 6 months. And she was just this shell. But she was the most willing shell I've ever seen. You know, I would say, hey, I told her, I said, I can't do anything working with you for a couple months because we're doing a workshop and I have to finish that. And so you're going to have to be patient. And she said, okay. And, I've watched her get out of her comfort zone and start meetings and reach out and do all the things that that we're supposed to do, you know, but she does it with such joy and, such integrity, you know, that it just blows me away. I've even called her and said, hey, you know, I got to go pick up this dog in Tonopah. You want to come with me? She's like, yeah, sure. And then we're almost there. And I'm like, I got to tell you, if it goes south, there's a gun under my seat and I need you to have my back. It's probably the only time I've ever seen her go, oh, okay, what kind of gun? You know? I'm like, yeah, it doesn't matter. It'll shoot. But that's the kind of person that Maggie is. You know, it's like, it's all good. And I've walked through a lot of difficult things with her. And, you know, she has the faith that walking through the difficult times, there's something on the other side. And, you know, I've watched her blossom into this incredible woman. And I'm so proud of her. Here's Maggie.
Great. Hi. All right. So my name is Maggie, and I'm a grateful member of Koanon. Hey. So I guess I'm here to talk about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I didn't think about this 2-3 months ago and thank you, Terry, for asking me to speak. And thanks to everybody on this committee, because I know I can only imagine how much work it is to put something like this together, so. And I'm grateful to be here. I thought about it, the planner that I am in my head, and I played it through my head, and none of it is in my head, so I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. So here I go. So I remember the first time I walked into the off-the-roller-coaster Koanon meeting, Thursday nights at 2121. I love that number. 121. I had been to Al-Anon meetings for probably about a year before then, and I got relief while I was there, but when I had relief for the hour that I was there, but when I went to that meeting, I was truly a shell. I mean, I was. I had gone through several relapses. With my husband, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to help him. I was, my heart was breaking because I was hearing things like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know, should I leave him? Should I stay? I'd been in meetings where people said, you know, how they were divorced and other people that were abused, and it was so confusing, and I just did not know what to do. And, I contemplated just driving off. There was many times that I was driving my car, and I contemplated just, you know, driving off, an embankment, or I've sat in the closet before with a gun. I didn't really want to die, but I just did not know how to keep going. I was at the end. I was completely and utterly powerless, demoralized. My life was a complete mess. my kids were more worried about losing me than their dad, I think. So that's what I was like when I came in. And the meeting, there was a counselor at Tempe Valley Hope who I had met through some family meetings that I'd attended. And she suggested I go to this meeting, and it was a lifesaver for me. And I know we say that. I mean, I've heard people say in the other program as well as ours that this program saved our lives, and it truly did. It truly did. So I walked in, and my life started to change. You know, the first meeting, there was a lady that came up to me and said, "Hey, we meet for soup before or after." I think at that time it was after the meeting, maybe before, I don't remember. And she nudged me to come to this. This is how I was first introduced into reaching out and actually having this meeting before the meeting. Now, you have to understand that, you know, I was a very private person. You know, I didn't share what was going on inside my house with any of you. I was good at keeping secrets. I was raised that way, that you kept your dirty laundry in the hamper and that people will judge you and they, you know, if they know these things about you. So I kept secrets. And, you know, things looked a lot different on the outside. So that was my first introduction and somebody pulling me in. And it was difficult for me to do that. But I did, because I just didn't know what else to do. I met my sponsor at this meeting, and I remember seeing her. And I did wait for her because I went to a couple of meetings and I saw something. And I heard something that I wanted. You know, I didn't hear, you know, do this or do that, or, you know, leave him or stay, or, you know, any of that. I just heard recovery. I heard I felt the healing in that room. And I really wanted what she had. And so I reached out and I waited. And it wasn't 2 months. I think it was 2 weeks. I don't think we waited that long. But What I was like and what it was like. I was married very young, 19. My husband was 20. So we kind of grew up together. So in the early parts of our marriage, we partied together. We had a lot of fun together and things were good. You know, we were married 5 years or so before we had our children. And, you know, things were good. You know, times where... you know, this disease was already present there, but I just didn't see it at that. You know, we had a good time. It really was not a problem, you know. I think enjoyed when he would get drunk, because he's kind of a quiet guy. And when he drinks, he's the fun of the life of the party. He talks more. He's fun, and he's a nice drunk. He's not, doesn't get mean. He actually is very, very pleasant. So, you know, I mean, my first experiences back then when we were young is that, you know, we would go to places together and I would be ready to go home, let's say at 12, and he would not, right? And then I would like walk home and he would stay. And then, you know, he may or may not come home an hour or two later. He may spend the night there. I really didn't know. And so those moments were already there, and I didn't like them. And we had fights over that. But I was so emotionally immature back then. You know, we really didn't talk about that. We would just argue. There'd be Christmas trees flying and holes in the wall, and, you know, and we'd fight and we'd wake up. And so, we started having our children, when the first time this disease really, really reared its ugly head to a point where I knew that something was not right is when I was pregnant with our second daughter, and he was... he had started, you know, and I didn't really know anything about drugs. You have to understand that, you know, I'd never seen alcoholism. I'd never seen drug addiction growing up. To me, an alcoholic was, you know, the old guy with a brown paper bag on a park bench, and the drug addict was this guy behind a dumpster. So, you know, what was in my house did not look or feel like alcoholism. You know, it was a young guy that just would kind of push it over the edge occasionally, and a young wife who... try to manipulate and control that in some way, which, you know, that's what wives do, don't we? I mean, we try to keep it together. We try to make sure, you know, everything's taken care of. And so, but, you know, in our, you know, late 20s is when it really became evident that there was something wrong. He started doing, I think, crystal meth. I don't know. And it was some form of cocaine. And he would be gone for days on end. I remember I was pregnant and I gave birth to our second daughter. And I look back at that and it was when I first felt that obsession over and the anxiety over him. Like, you know, I could not. I mean, I had a newborn daughter at home, and my mind was completely obsessed of when he was coming home. He would be gone. He's one of those dashers. He doesn't stick around the house and use. He would leave for days on end. And so I had a 2-week-old baby or a month-old baby, and I was like, you know, I would be up all night. I would put her in a stroller and have my 2-year-old, and I would walk around looking for him. I thought maybe he'd forget where we lived, because I had to go looking for him, you know, or he forgot where we lived. So I don't know. But that's what I did, you know, and I didn't tell anybody. You know, my family lives overseas, so they weren't around to see this. I didn't tell anybody. I did not have any friends to speak of. They were all very superficial. This was not something that I could talk to about, you know, to anybody. So, he would come home days later, and I remember him begging me to tell him. I remember one time he came home and he was just crying, and he had picked some stuff out of a dumpster, and I brought it home as a, you know, things that he had found, right? Gifts, right? I remember it was like a He-Man toy set, like a, you know, with toy dolls, and he brought it home, and I remember him crying and saying, just tell me you'll leave me, you know, just tell me that you will leave me so I can, I don't want to do this, right? You know, I just thought of this right now. I mean, it kind of had slipped my mind. So the unmanageability was already there. I remember, you know, when he was home, and he would say these things to me, I just so much believed him. You know, I knew that it would not happen again. There's no way. I mean, we had, you know, we have such a deep love for each other, and I knew that he loved me, and so it just was confusing that he would choose to leave and do this than to stay home with, you know, with his newborn child and a 2-year-old, a toddler at home. So he found recovery on his own, not through this program. I did not know about Al-Anon. I didn't know about AA. I didn't see nothing. I didn't know anything. He bare-knuckled. He did bare-knuckled sobriety. He stopped using the hard drugs he was using then. And for the next 15 years or so, I think that he was medicating himself in other ways. But as we were raising our children, there was years of where he did not drink. So he was on a health kick. So everything in our house had to be organic. And we could only shop at Whole Foods, but that was his, you know, I remember thinking, like, what the hell is wrong with him, you know? Why can't we just, like, do a mixture? Why does it all have to be all or nothing? But I know now that that's just part of his, disease, you know? So there was times where he'd be in the gym every day. You know, we only had organic foods in the house. We couldn't buy anything, you know, processed. I remember times like that in our lives. And, you know, there was signs that there was something wrong. I mean, I remember one time he went to a ball game with some work friends, and everybody went home, but he never made it home. And so I called around to see, you know, who saw him last, and you know, and so this was before cell phones, and so I didn't know where he was. And he was, I think he had gone to a strip club. He had gotten so drunk at the ball game that that's where he ended up, and he was in a blackout. And I think that is the first time that I noticed my part of the disease that I had. I left my kids at home, and I went driving around for him. This was, I think, the first time that I actually left them to go looking for him. And, you know, in the reading, the beginning of this meeting, we talk about obsession, anxiety, anger, denial, and guilt. And that is my disease. That is my part of this disease. And I remember the obsession that I had. I had the obsession before, but I didn't act on it. I was still kind of a little bit sane in the very beginning. But I remember during that time, I left my kids at home. I got in my car, and I'm driving to strip clubs, because I don't know how I knew that Tari where he was. Maybe somebody told me. I don't know. And I remember hanging around in the parking lot at 3 in the morning, just waiting, because I didn't dare to go in. Now I would go in, but then I didn't dare to go in until he came out. And I watched, and I didn't, you know, and I watched him, you know, I hid, and I watched him get in his car. He was wasted, and he drove home, and I followed him to make sure he was okay. Right? So, you know, this is what I was like, and this is what I had become. My God-given tools that I'd been given to stay healthy had morphed themselves into something just completely weird. It was like a teenage ninja mutant thing kind of thing that happened. I was a person at home that if I said we were going to have an event at our house, my kids would be hiding in their rooms. I was such a control freak that if things were not a certain way, I just could not handle it. You know, if things had to look a certain way, I was a perfectionist. I was yelling at them all the time. I don't know who was sicker. You know, he might be gone, but I was at home with them, and I think that they would rather be with him than with me because I was so, you know, I was just crazy. You know, I did not know where I ended and he began. I remember that, I wanted things to be a certain way. Like if I had like an hors d'oeuvre tray somewhere, I needed to have a certain plate. And by God, they would find the tray that I needed. With my kids growing up, I was hard on them about things like that. I think that a lot of that perfectionism that I struggled with was my way of trying to just to keep it all together and deal with it. That if things were a certain way, or if I did things a certain way, that I could manage this. I really don't know. You know, I don't know why I did what I did, but that's how it was in my house. And I know that I know my kids were and I had a lot of anxiety over this. So about 5 years ago, now, mind you, my husband is what I would call a functioning alcoholic, a functioning drug user. There was no jail. There was no DUIs. And it's not because he didn't drive drunk or he didn't do things that he shouldn't have done. It's just that, you know, it just isn't part of our story. It's not part of my story. We were making a good income. He was a professional. He had gone to school. I was working. We were doing good. You know, on the outside, everything was lovely. But on the inside, you know, there was a lot of unresolved issues from when we were younger. They kind of just carried themselves through. There was absolutely, I had no idea what was going on inside of me, because you have to understand that here we are 20 years later, 30 years later, and I had completely lost myself in this. You know, I couldn't tell you what I liked, what I didn't like. I was a shell of a person. You know, I didn't really know. My focus was, trying to manage you. I remember that. Like, having my kids do what I needed to, what I wanted them to do, having them be a certain way, having him do what I needed him to do, as long as we were financially okay. I really didn't want to hear anything else. I didn't pay attention to our finances. As long as we had, you know, I had money to spend, I was good to go. And that's where I kind of was. I don't know. You know, I'm going to talk about this. You know, I had a third pregnancy while we were married. And, you know, I couldn't go through with this pregnancy because of the pain that I had been through. Sorry, this is the first time I'm kind of sharing this. But I'm sharing it not because I want you to feel sorry for me, but I'm sharing it because, you know, I still am working through this today. you know, I made this choice because, unbeknownst to me, this disease had robbed me of any security that I had, of any hope that I had, that I just could not see myself bringing another kid into this world after just kind of going through this alone before. So, you know, I still live with that guilt today, and I still am working through that today. But, you know, it's just part of my story. So five, 6 years ago, you know, this disease kind of came up furious. I mean, the drug use progressed from probably, you know, maintenance. I don't know. You know, I'm not here to tell his story, but it just, the shit hit the fan. I mean, that's what happened. He blackout. He left the house one day, and this is, you know, he's working. He's an executive with a company, so this is not something where you just disappear and nobody notices. So I am doing what our book tells. I was calling in for him. I was telling lies. I was covering up. I was embarrassed. We're working for the same company, so people knew me. It wasn't like I could hide from this. I didn't know where he was. He left. He said, you know, I want a divorce. I don't want to be with you anymore. And I'm just like, it was like a kick in the stomach. At least it felt like that. Like, what? Where did this come from, right? Even though we were heading to that all along, but I just did not see it. I was so much in denial about what was really going on around me that I didn't see it. So he was out for a couple of weeks or so. He came back, and he was ready to go to rehab. This is our first experience, my first experience with rehab. And I was introduced. Oh, actually, I take that back. This is before rehab. I remember Googling, my husband is doing meth, or my I didn't even know Al-Anon. I don't know where my husband is, and I think he's doing drugs, that kind of stuff. So Al-Anon pops up. That's what pops up. We're living in Tucson at the time. So I go to an Al-Anon meeting, and I go in there, and I knew I was in the right place. You know, I did. I sat in there. I didn't know shit from shit about recovery. I just knew that when I sat in there for that hour, that I had some relief. I could somewhat relate to it. It was weird, you know, and there was some secret handshake going on. I don't know. It was just strange, but there was something in there that I connected with, and so I kept going back because I didn't know what else to do. You know, I didn't know where he was. My kids were grown at this point, but I remember at one of the meetings, it was a newcomers meeting. I went up to this guy afterwards. It was the first time I ever went up, and I told him I didn't know where he was, and he said, you know, God's got him. And I'm like, you know, what the hell is wrong with you? What do you mean God's got him? You know, that's what I thought. And I'm like, okay, dude. So I remember that though. I remember, and I don't know his name. I don't know what this man looked like. But even though in my head I just could not fathom a God having him, but I so remember that moment, and I think it did give me some peace, even though the skeptic and the crazy person in my mind just couldn't connect the dots at that point, but that's what he said, and I remember that to this day. And we had GPS, I mean, we had phones that had GPS at that time, so I was able to kind of keep tabs on him because I could ping his phone, so I would kind of knew that he was still in the vicinity. It wasn't pretty, so you kind of get the picture. You know, I have no idea how I was able to maintain my job, but I did. I didn't, you know, because really, even while I was working, I really was completely, you know, obsessed about him. I worried constantly. He was not working. And so I had this constant anxiety of what am I going to do? You know, what, this paycheck's not going to come in, you know. So it was during the holiday season. So somehow, I don't know, he's got this luck where he seems to always work it out to where somehow we can manage financially. We were able, it wasn't him. I know that now. But it somehow, he didn't lose his job right away. He went to rehab. He went to Chandler Valley Hope, and that was his and my first experience with recovery. And I loved recovery. we would play ping pong every day. And I would go visit him, and I could sleep for the first time because I knew where he was. And even though there was no, I mean, he could leave, but I remember having peace. And I think my kids were just so glad that he was there, just not because of him, but because of me, because I can tell you that I'm sure drove them crazy. I couldn't do anything except for obsess over what he was doing. So rehab was wonderful for me. It was wonderful. I see pictures of him, of us, that are on Facebook sometimes during that time, and it was true happiness, you know. And you know, I know they talk about a pink cloud, and but whatever, it was really good. It was good, and it was my first introduction to recovery, true recovery. I was going to meetings before then, and through the process of him relapsing and going back in and relapsing and going back in, because that is my story, I got tighter and tighter and tighter into this program. I remember every call that I made to my sponsor, when I had a sponsor, to say he's out again, and this fellowship that just embraced me. Men that would get up and go to his hospital to 12-step him. I remember he was in the county. I don't know where he was because he's visited all the establishments in the city. I remember he was, I think he was at the county, I don't know, and I had visited him and I'd left to get something to eat, and I came back up and I could hear voices in his room, so I didn't step in, but I could see, and there was two people in the room and there was a curtain, so he didn't have his private room, and I look. And there was Terry M. and Tommy and I think a couple other people. And they were talking to him. I didn't know. I knew Terry, but I didn't know the other men there. And they were speaking to him. And it was such a relief to know I wasn't alone in this. I had never experienced that. I'm a type of person that is like, you don't need to know my shit, you know, because you just don't need to know it. And I don't think I've admitted to this, but I eavesdropped to this. Sorry. I did. I don't really know what they were saying, but I could hear them mumbling, and I just was so grateful. I was grateful for myself because I felt the peace. I don't know what he was feeling, but I felt just the love and the peace. And it took me to reach out to somebody. I did not know how to reach out to people when I came here. I just didn't know how to do that. I've witnessed that, I started the steps during that time. I knew that, talk about catch the buzz. That's when I caught my buzz, is when I started working the steps, because around that time, my timeline may be off, but it's just really all a big blur and I don't care. It's 5 years, whatever. So it all happened around that time. I started working the steps, and as I was working the steps, it helped me to deal with situations that were coming along. Like, I remember, I had no boundaries. I didn't know how to detach. I did not know how to live a life and have fun unless he was okay. Now, I would have never admitted that I was codependent or that I was like that, but I was. You know, on the outward, I was professional. I'm outspoken. I can take care of myself. But at the inside, at the core level, I am not okay unless you're okay. And I had mentioned earlier, I'd lost myself in all this. I didn't know what to do with myself if I didn't have to worry about him. I think that it also was part of my, the guilt that I had about it, the obsession that I had, it brought me some sort of, it was a solution for me to take care of him. I remember whenever he would come back after a relapse, I felt good. So I think it was somewhat of a solution for me to have that taken care of, that thrill of, I don't know what it was, but I created a lot of this myself because I wouldn't just go and spend time with my kids. I remember one time, my oldest, she was living with us at the time, and I was in front of the computer. This was when I was, I'm trying to see where he is now. Mind you, this man knows where we live and he knows my number, but I'm on the Verizon GPS site and I am locating him, you know, where he is, you know, 44th Street in Van Buren, you know, all the great parts of town. And I'm just following him. And she tells me, she says, Mom, let's go do something. And I look at her and I'm like, you don't understand. You know, he's my husband and this is what I need to do. And she just, you know, she looked at me and, you know, she knew that this was not right. She knew that I was in an unhealthy place and I could not see it. I could not see it. I was pretty batshit crazy, as my sponsor likes to say. So that's where I was. So I was working the steps. I felt the love of this program. I started telling the truth. You know, I'm a great secret keeper. And as we say in this fellowship, that we're as sick as our secrets, or maybe in all the 12-step fellowships, but I was a good secret keeper, and opening up and telling the truth was tough for me, and I started to do that. I started working the steps. I working this program allowed me to learn about things like detachment and boundaries. You know, for me, detachment was, you know, amputation. So either I would just enable you or I will never talk to you again. That was my form of detachment. I did not know how to just love you and accept you for who you are. I didn't know how to do that. It was ridiculous to me that I should accept that you go spend all our money and you do that, you do drugs or you do, I couldn't fathom that. So either you're a piece of shit or I'm going to just hold you down and just help the shit out of you until you change your ways. I mean, that was kind of my thing. I didn't know. I didn't know how to just love you. And I learned that here. I learned about love and tolerance and acceptance. So I was not great. I did not attach gracefully. I sucked at it. You know, I remember the first time that I had that, you know, that feeling of success in this program, if you can have that. I knew that he was releasing himself from a detox where he was, and he was not going to a sober living. I talked to him on the phone, and he was saying, well, I'm coming home. And I'm like, I don't want you to come home, because I was learning about, he'd always come home, and I just wasn't healthy. You know, him living at home, it was driving me crazy. It was not a good place for me. So it wasn't that I was trying to punish him, but I had learned, which before that's what my intentions would be, like, you know, let me manipulate you into seeing if maybe you would, like, go to rehab by just saying, you can't come home. What are you going to do with that, right? So, but I didn't. I was in a good place. He called. He says, I'm coming home. Oh, can you come and get me? I said, I'm not going to come and get you. I said, you know, I'm not good. I'm not in a good place. You know, I need you to go to a sober living facility. I said, you need to call your sponsor. You need to call your people, and I'll call my people. And I did. I called my people. And I said, I don't know what to do. I think he's going to come home. And she said to me, just repeat the same thing over and over again. I love you. But no, it was something like that, you know. I'm like, okay. You know, this is the other thing. This is a pretty simple, you know, I mean, the words that I learned in this program are simple. I didn't have to learn pages of stuff. They're like, no, bummer. You know, you'll figure it out. I love you, you know. So very simple, one-letter words, wonderful. So I could do that. You know, I'm a slow learner, but I could do that. So I'm like, okay. So she, you know, talked me down. I was calming off. So he showed up at the door. He took a cab and he showed up at the door. Now, he came to the garage because I left the garage door open, and I opened the door, and here he was. And here's this man that I love dearly. And I look at him, and at the time I didn't realize what that look was, but I know now that he was very scared. I didn't know. I know now. I used to think that was arrogance in his eyes. And now I know that it was fear, because he's told me, because we talk about that today, and we're able to share these moments today as we heal our marriage and as we're both in recovery. So I opened the door, and I said, you can't come in. Now, I didn't know whether he would, you know, and like I said, he's always been a nice guy, so I wasn't scared for myself, but I just didn't know whether he would force himself in. And I said, you can't come in. And he goes, this is my house too. I said, I know, but if you want us to get better, you cannot come in, because I'm not okay with you being here. It's not about you, it's about me, because that's what I learned. to put the focus on myself. And that was the truth. I was not okay. As much as my codependent, obsessive, anxiety-ridden person wanted to say, yes, let me come and save you. You know, come in, let me run you a bath or whatever. I didn't do that. I knew that it was not good for me. And he didn't come in. He turned around and he left. And he got into his truck and he left, and I watched his eyes. And he went and he found a place to live in a halfway house or in a sober living facility. That was my first experience with attachment. Never in a million years had I done that before. So, you know, another thing that happened is I started, you know, being of service. You know, I started to, you know, I think I was in my third or fourth step, and somebody in my group reached out to me and asked me if I would sponsor her, and I'm like, nope, that's my first nope. So then I spoke to my sponsor. I'm like, somebody asked me to sponsor them. I told him I'm only on my third step, and she said, so what? You know, she was here three steps ahead of her, and so that was my introduction, my little nudge that it was time for me to give back, and it was scary. It was scary to be vulnerable like that, because to me, you know, I can talk the talk, but to sit down one-on-one with a person and share with them and walk them through the steps was a scary thing for me, because you have to understand that, you know, I'm a perfectionist. You know, I want to do things, you know, perfectly, because I'm afraid how you're going to think of me if I don't. Like if, you know, and that's a whole nother story, but, you know, this is where my heart's taking me today. But so I was, you know, for me, the perfectionist that I am, it was scary for me to do something that, you know, I wasn't, you know, it was new to me. But, you know, in this process, in the first, second, and third step, somewhere in this process, I somehow connected with this higher power that we all talk about. And I've never been a religious person. I think I've always felt that there was something bigger than me, but I did not know how to communicate or have a relationship with this higher power. Okay? And I happen to call my higher power God. But my sponsor was gentle with me. And as I was going through the steps, I gently started to build this relationship. And I gently started to trust that I would be okay, that things would be okay, and that I was loved just the way I was, with all my edges and all, you know, and all my chatter mouth and all those things. Not only was I loved, you know, by all of you, but by this higher power, and I know that God is in all of you, so there we go. I didn't have to be perfect, and that you knew more about me than my parents did. You knew more about me than my husband probably did. And you didn't judge me. You would laugh with me. We would laugh about things that no normal person would laugh at. You know, it's wonderful. I remember laughing. I mean, I did. I was kind of like, I still cry when we read the Honest Look at Ourselves to this day. Now because I'm joyful about it, because I remember where I was at, but I remember the first 6-7 months I couldn't read that and without sobbing, and I think that's why you guys gave it to me every time, it seemed like. But it's just been a wonderful ride, just a wonderful, wonderful ride. Where am I today? Okay, so. I worked on myself. You know, I did not go into Kohanan to find myself, to work on myself. But I want you to know that when I came into this room, my whole world was gray. All the color had just been sucked out of it. There was no color. And I knew that I used to be colorful. I know that I'm a colorful person, but there was no color. It wasn't even black and white. And I love black and white. But there was nothing. It was just gray. I was fearful about making the wrong move. I was fearful about being, joyous in case the other shoe would drop. Even this is in recovery too. I mean, I was really scared. We had to start relearning to trust each other, and but my world was pretty gray, I was able to start bringing out the crayons and start coloring things in a little bit, and that's pretty awesome, I did not go into this meeting to take the covers off anything. I wanted to just, keep it hidden. And that's what it let me do. I took the covers off. I took the crayon box out. And I started to work on myself. I don't know how it works. No idea. I just know it works. I was talking to my sponsor maybe a year ago. And I'm like, we were talking about something. And I'm like, when did this shift happen? When did I, why didn't I hear this 3 years ago? Why now all of a sudden? And she says, isn't this wonderful? She's so nice. She's like, isn't this wonderful? I'm like, yes. It's like, and I don't know how it happened. I just know it did. I don't know how God in, but I guess, I opened the door enough to where he could just open it up, because he sure as hell did. And the only time he's not big in my life is when I try to, shove it out, because he's big. My God has to be big. Because I got big problems now. I moved. I moved across the country, and the love of this fellowship just stayed with me. I was able to, I don't know why God sent us where he did, but he did. And I found people like us in Green Bay, Wisconsin. They exist, really, and in New Mexico, we are everywhere. We're absolutely everywhere, and it didn't matter what room I went in. I took you guys with me. I did. This fellowship here in Phoenix is known in Green Bay, Wisconsin. This Conan Fellowship, it is a miracle. If you would have asked me 5 years ago that I was standing here talking to a group of people, I would have said, yeah, no. I'll drink cyanide first before I stand and talk to anybody. So, but here I am. And I'm here not because I want to be here. I would much rather sit in a small circle. I can do that. But, and work with somebody one-on-one. But I'm here because I was asked to be here. And I know that when I walked into that room 3.5 years ago, you guys were in that room, and you took me in, and when I went to a meeting, somebody stood up front and shared of themselves, and that's where I need to be. So today, we both have recovery. I had recovery even when he didn't. It's okay. I'm healthier than I've ever been. I'm able to understand that. To understand that I will be okay, regardless of what happens, that it will pass, whatever it is, it will pass, and I will be okay. That is, for me, for someone like me who's a constant worrier, for someone like me whose anger doesn't, I don't like hit or yell and scream. My anger is very internal, that I don't have to live like that anymore, that I can... It's just my sponsor. I know I say that a lot, but I owe this woman my life. And I say that because, when I walked in here, I didn't hear, you need to leave him or you need to stay. I didn't hear any of that. All I heard is, we love you. Take care of yourself. How can I help you? And everything else will work out. And that's exactly what happened. Everybody's journey is different. This is why we don't give advice to each other. What's right for me may not be right for you. It's not my place. All I can do is share, what my journey has been like and how it, how it's, what I've done. And so for me, what worked for me is keep working on myself, regardless of what he did. I work on myself. He's had recovery, but we work our own. We work our programs. I don't check. You know, whole another 2-hour session here. I don't check up to see if he's going to enough meetings. I don't quiz him on when he's called his sponsor last, which I've done. I used to count the days. I don't do that anymore. I was very active in his sobriety as well. It didn't work out very well. So, but I'm better today. I'm better today. I don't. You know, I focus on myself. And it's just a miracle how that works. I focus on myself. I try to be of service. I try to take myself not too seriously the best I can. And I let him work his program, and I trust in my God. And I trust in my God that He will take care of him. And I ask God every day to take care of me, and to help me be willing. I think that is the first prayer that I learned, is just a willingness to be willing. God, help me to be willing, because I had a hard time with that. So, you know, a marriage is stronger. We have gone through a lot. We have faced infidelity. You know, talk about coming back, you know, and learning about forgiveness and trusting again. But we did. I couldn't have done this. You know, I could not have done this without this program. The anger and the resentment would have eaten me alive. It would have destroyed our marriage, no matter how much love we would have for each other. I'm able to, you know, have a good relationship with my children. You know, I made amends to my children. You know, I could talk about, you know, being the perfectionist that I was when they were growing up, and to make my amends about and tell them that I loved them, even though maybe it felt like I was trying to, you know, that I wanted them to be more than they were, that I accepted them who they were, and that I loved them exactly where they were, even though I couldn't show that. That's what my intent was. So I was able to do that. That would have never happened. Never. And now, you know, no matter what they do, I hope they know that I love them and I accept them no matter what. That is a miracle. Because I was worried about them too. I mean, I was worried about everything. So, you know, I truly believe that recovery is a family affair. That if we each, for me, focusing on myself and him focusing on himself is what allowed us to become stronger and to work through these problems. I know that. I don't know about him. I know that for me, a marriage would not have survived if I did not have this program. I don't know that I would have survived, marriage aside. I don't know that I could have lived through that. So it brought in a lot of healing, right? A lot of healing, a lot of joy. We can laugh. We can talk about things that happen now without there being hate. We can talk about these things, you know. I don't worry about, you know, what he's up to, or what he's doing. I can go and clean my house without worrying whether he's into that or not, you know, which was a big deal for me. Like, you should want to do the dishes as opposed to just doing that. I mean, just stupid, you know. I don't know if you can relate to that, but that's how I was. So, you know, my heart is full. I am grateful. I'm grateful, and I went to a meeting this morning about gratitude, and I can tell you, for me, you know, my sponsor has made me do more gratitude lists than I care to admit, but I can tell you that if anything, it's taught me that gratitude is not just I think it's the action. The action is what brings me the benefit, the buzz of what it feels like to have gratitude. I can write it down all day long, but then I have to back it up with something. And that's what I've learned. But that's what I need, because my brain still wants to go to, like, poor me and, replay that tape in my head. It's still there. But I have tools today to help me work through that. And I have people in this fellowship that know, and I can't bullshit them. I can't. Well, I try, but I can't. So I think that's it. That's all I have. Thank you. I love you all. Really happy to be here. And with that, I'll pass.